I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for our shape-up this week are author Jimmy Israel, Johns Hopkins political science professor and author Lester Spence, Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre, and from National Review Magazine and the Texas Public Policy Foundation, Mario Loyola. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas. Welcome to the shop. How are we doing today?
Yo.
Cold chilling.
Cold indeed.
Right. You know what? Well, let's get things talking about, let's get things started off talking about Herman Cain's new video was released this week. Now, I'm not sure if it's smoking hot or just kind of sending up some flares, but people are certainly talking about it. Michelle, we got some clips, right?
Yes, we do. And I think you've alluded to what it is that's interesting about it. It's not just what the president's chief of staff does. It's, well, you're going to hear his voice, but
right.
I'll have to explain, you know, what is going on. Here it is. This is Mark Block.
Mm-hmm. We've run a campaign like nobody's ever seen, but then America's never seen a candidate like Herman Cain. We need you to get involved because together we can do this. We can take this country back.
Wow.
So that's Cain's chief of staff, Mark Block. But then after he's finished talking, the camera pushes in for a tight shot, and he's taking this long drag off of a cigarette. And then the video cuts to Herman Cain. He's got this kind of mischievous grin on his face. So
wow. Yeah.
It is mischievous.
Yeah, Michelle. Well, hold on. I want everybody. Thanks for that, Michelle. I want
sure.
everybody to kind of follow me on this right quick. You know, for me, I look at this ad as kind of like a gorilla. That's kind of like a guerrilla Dadaist facade, you know. And follow me. Hold on. It's kind of the anti-ad that succeeds by speaking to its constituency precisely because it's kind of flying in the face of comparable contemporary tropes. Now, it's kind of like lo-fi dog whistle politics for dummies, in my opinion. You know, and I think it's an excellent political strategy. Doctor, what do you think?
You know what? Except for the four dummies part, I agree with you. You know, the first time when I first saw the ad, the first character that came to mind was the cigarette man that was popularized in the X-Files more than 10 years ago. And it's this kind of character who's kind of an outsider who speaks truth to power.
Right,
and
right.
And if you think about it, you're right. That ad isn't for all of us. That ad speaking to a very specific demographic who's interested in speaking truth to power in a very certain way. So him blowing smoke into the smoke into the camera is the equivalent of saying, well, it's NPR.
Right.
You know, it's the equivalent of being of making a really aggressive stance that speaks to, I think, white working class Southern voters really, really well.
Well, definitely a hand well played. Go ahead, Pablo.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I respect those textual readings of it. To me, I just think Herman Cain is this viral marketing genius, you know? I mean,
yeah.
The video has been viewed a million times. It's talked about by everybody, not just us, cable news everywhere. Mitt Romney is spending around seven figures on his digital advertising budget. Herman Cain gets his chief of staff to stand outside a Vegas casino, and he gets a million views. And do I think that these ads are actually substantively helping him win potentially a general election? No. But I do think that Herman Cain is leading the polls, a lot of the polls, for a reason. And it's because he's one of those names that's becoming more and more legitimate by attrition. He's just around so much, and his name is being repeated and talked about in the popular culture. And just by hearing it over and over again, people are realizing that this character that is becoming more and more familiar and legitimate just because he's around so much. So I think he has this second career for himself. Do I think he's going to be president? Not at all. But I do think that he has this whole other career for himself as this political figure, and it's due in part to these really weird videos and his weird marketing scheme.
Well, you say tomato, I say Dada. Go ahead, Mario.
Well, I was just going to say there's another reason I think that he's becoming legitimate, which is this is, you know, I met him a couple of hours after I was on with you guys in the studio a couple weeks ago, and this is really like an outsized personality. I mean, this guy is, you don't notice it at first, but he's really like, he's in a room and he fills the room. I mean, it's a gigantic American personality, and that's, I think, what's giving him some compelling force. You know, the commercial is – the thing that I liked about this commercial is, you know, you guys, we conservatives admit that we have a deficit in the area of coolness, you know. And Michelle knows that I'm
– Really? No way.
Michelle, Michelle knows that
way.
I work hard to do –
That is an amazing quote.
Yeah, you know, Michelle knows that I work hard to do what I can to fix that, but I'm only one.
That's true. You're only one man.
That's gangster. Yeah. That's gangster.
I'm here in Austin, Texas. I'm all about local
effects.
You down
with GOP?
Like but look, you know, I mean, I saw this, and what it reminded me of wasn't the smoking man, although now that I think about it. But what I saw was it reminded me of the opening scene of Jean-Luc Godard's Au Bout du Souffle, which launched the French New Wave at the beginning of the
'60s. Right,
right. Where the guy's smoking, and he's about to steal a car, you know, and he's looking as cool as anybody in the history of film, and he's smoking a cigarette, and he keeps taking a puff, and then touching his thumb against his lips, and then taking a puff and touching his thumb against his lips, and if he had just touched his, you know, if the chief of staff had just touched his thumb against his lips once, I would have been like, now that's cool. That's really cool.
Can I just say this? You all are so NPR, despite yourselves. You can't even help yourselves. That is like so NPR. You're trying, like,
I feel ashamed.
I can't even help you. But you know what? You know what? I'm going to laugh so hard when the book is written, because there's always a book after the campaign. There's always a book, sometimes not even before the campaign is over. And it's some intern that would say, hey, Mark, want to check out my new video camera? You know, and that's all that happened. You know, the guy had some coffee and was goofing around and he put it on YouTube. I'm going to laugh so hard. But we'll see. We will see.
And okay.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barbershop, and we are joined by author Jimmy Israel, political science professor and author Lester Spence, columnist Mario Loyola, and Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thank you, Michelle. All right, well, we're going to move from one GOP candidate to another. Texas Governor Rick Perry received attention this week for his 20% flat tax plan, but it was his campaign manager's statement that Perry might skip some of the future debates. That's kind of raising some eyebrows now, Michelle. And you know what I think? I think this is kind of a case where it's like you have a boxer, and he's not doing so hot. So you tell him to sit out a few fights, and you season him a little bit. You know, I mean, it's one of those things where you got to know when to hold him and know when to fold him, Jack. Lester, you know, is he trying to avoid an arena where, you know, he hasn't done very well?
Yeah, the debate as a format just doesn't fit for him at all. And it's really clear that he's not – it's not just that the debate as a format doesn't fit for him. Is that in some ways he's kind of not really fit. He doesn't really quite understand the job he's run or the office he's running for, right? So it's not just that he comes up with a 20% flat tax plan. It's a tax plan he just came up with, and he doesn't even know all of the details. Now, granted, you can make that kind of critique against Kaine's 999 program, but the way he was caught kind of flat-footed, it just signals that he really needs to take some time and reconsider, and that's what he's doing.
And, you know, actually, Jimmy, your boxing analogy, I think, is actually kind of brilliant, because in the world of boxing, what you do is you'd set him up, or a covering fighter, with some tomato cans, you know, some guys to beat up on. So maybe we schedule Rick Perry against some old-time local Texas politicians, guys he knows before, get him back into the swing of things, and then he can come back to the big boys and actually debate presidential candidates, because at this point, it's kind of embarrassing, right? I mean, the fact that the guy had to admit that, you know, in a self-deprecating way, that he actually isn't perfect in these debates, that's what he had said recently, you know, that's significant, right? I mean, the fact that he has to joke about his own weaknesses, Rick Perry of all people, seems like a pretty big step. And the fact that he, you know, honestly, the fact that he can't hold his own in these debates, I don't think these debates are the greatest forum for democracy. By no means do I think that. Mm-hmm. But I do think the guy has to be at the stand and take questions because he wants to be president. I mean, that's kind of one of the basic requirements.
Can I just ask Mario? Let me just ask Mario this, though, because you're in Texas. And Mario, I'll just mention that one of the organizations you work for, the Texas Policy Foundation, which is a conservative think tank, does receive proceeds from one of the governor's books. So I do know that I want to be sure to mention it, because I know you want us to mention that. But is this a technique that he's employed in the past? Like, when something isn't working for him, he'll just say, I'm not doing it. And has that worked for him?
The governor is somebody that a lot of people have counted out in previous elections. And all of those people turned out to be wrong. So he has a, you know, I just want to point that out. I'm just pointing out history. I mean, this guy's never lost a campaign. And I'll answer your question this way. One of the things, I ran against him. I was Senator Hutchison's domestic policy advisor during the primary challenge to Governor Perry 2 years ago. And one thing that really impressed me about the governor's campaign is that he would rise seemingly without doing anything, you know. As we would be doing all kinds of things to try to get up in the polls, and they would seem to be doing nothing, and that like worked, and they would just, their numbers would just get better and better. And so he's got a very good sense of timing, and the people around him are really, really smart strategists. And so, you know, and there's, you know, the problem with the debate format for any leading candidate is that it flattens the field. You know, you can have a couple of crackpots up mm-hmm. there and some major heavyweights. You put them on the same stage long enough and they all start to look more or less the same size. You know what I mean?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so the debates, having too many debates when you are in a front runner position is, or when you want to be in a front runner position is a tricky.
You're right. It does tend to elevate the back of the field. You know, it really does tend to elevate the back of the field. So, Jimmy, what's...
Well, I think Rick Perry is like the lost love child of James Stockdale and Cosmo Kramer, but that's just me.
Well, thank you.
It'd be nice.
You've gone from Dada to Stark. Okay, let's move on
to another
issue.
Right. To more important matters.
This week, this health advisory panel made this interesting recommendation. It said that the HPV vaccine, which is aimed at preventing diseases like the human papillomavirus vaccine, which causes cervical cancer, shouldn't just be given to girls, but also to boys and mm-hmm. young men. The advisory committee says the HPV vaccine can also protect against anal and throat cancers, and both can be a result of sexual activity. I should have warned parents there that, you know, this is there's some adult conversation here going on, if that's not appropriate for everybody to listen to right now. So, Jimmy, I don't know, what are your thoughts about this? You're a dad.
Well, I am a dad, and, you know, my wife and I feel differently about this, so it's kind of an ongoing discussion, but me personally, I'm on team shot. I mean, you know, an ounce of provision is worth mm-hmm. a pound of cure. It's not that I want my son to be setting it out all like that, because I don't, but better safe than sorry. I mean, Lester, I mean, come on, man. You're with me, right? You're with me, Lester.
Team shot.
What's going on here is they want to give everybody the shot, because mm-hmm. there are certain populations that will be kind of scared to take the shot because they'll be stigmatized. That's right. So you give it to everybody and you'll hit that target population.
But it's expensive, isn't it?
But this is the thing. It's a $300 shot, right? And they're only talking about 5,000 cases a year, I believe. So if they're talking about giving everybody a $300 shot, to say 5,000, to deal with 5,000 cases, I'm not sure those numbers work. I have to think about
that. Yeah, I think that's, you put your finger on it right there. I mean, I think one of the biggest questions, we're facing this in all kinds of different areas, environmental protection, CDC. You know, we like to trust that these people that are in charge know what they're doing when they make recommendations like this. But American society has gone way off the deep end of precautionary principle. We're imposing huge costs left and right on the society as a whole to eliminate really marginal risk of loss to, you know, some small population of people. And we're doing that all across the board. And it's really expensive and it's not good. And it's something we should think about more carefully. So that's why a decision like this, a recommendation like this, needs to be looked at carefully to make sure that they've actually done some kind of rational cost-benefit analysis and aren't, you know, imposing widespread costs on everybody just to avoid the stigmatization that somebody might associate with something. I mean, that's what worries me.
Hmm. Okay. Well, just real quick, to me, mm-hmm. I mean, if the practicality of it is, you know, the cost-benefit and all that is certainly a valid point. I mean, it just, for me, the incentives for why people might be uncomfortable with this, you know, as long as it's done, I mean, as long as it's not because, you know, obviously there's a correlation between homosexuals getting what we're talking about, the condition, the disease we're talking about, as long as that's not the stigmatization, this mental stigmatization, which really has no root in science at all. Okay. As long as that's not the motive, then, you know, I can be on board with that.
Well, there's also the whole question of insurance and whether these recommendations drive the insurance market, you know, or not. So mm-hmm. that is obviously an issue.
Sure.
But before we go, got to ask you about T.O., Terrell Owens. He had an open workout. This Terrell Owens, I always get that one. That's why I go with T.O., Jimmy. He had an open workout this week. He wanted to impress people, secure an NFL contract. Not one team showed up, Pablo. Yeah. What's up with that?
What's up with that? He needs to take a page from the Rick Perry playbook and just hit the next couple of workouts out, I think. I mean, look, listen, Michelle, we've talked about Brett Favre forever on this show. If Brett Favre can play at age 40, then Terrell Owens can play. Terrell Owens can play at age 39. And the guy, you know, he's one of these controversial figures. The NFL is built on characters, right? I mean, at some point, there are so many bad teams out there who are struggling that you get T.O. and you get tickets. I mean, it's going to happen at some point. It's only a matter of time. Every NFL no NFL team is above signing a character for Q rating, and we'll see it again this year.
Why do you think that nobody was there? Why didn't anybody come?
You know,
can't they see the video feed?
Oh, exactly. They're just following their Twitter feeds, and they're getting it on Ustream, I think. No, I mean, T.O. he's a controversial character. He's not likable. He's not liked by a lot of people. He's burnt plenty of bridges, but that has by no means stopped anybody in the past, Brett Favre again being Exhibit A in that regard.
Hmm. Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Brett, because I'll never forget, I think it was about 10 years ago, there was a playoff game between San Francisco and the Packers, and we were about to win, we were headed straight to the NFC Championship, and Terrell Owens caught, they were losing by 4 points, Owens catches a 35-yard pass from Steve Young with 6 seconds left. That sent me into, like, therapy. The
well, I mean, and that's what's sad is that T.O., I mean, they say, like, every athlete dies twice. You know, you die when you actually die, and you die when you retire. And T.O., wow. like Brett Favre, does not want to meet his maker in that second regard just yet.
I love me some me. That's my favorite.
Exactly.
I love me some me. I should have got buttons made up for all of you. I love me some me.
I'd rock that.
You'd rock that?
I'd rock that.
Jimmy, I did not hear from Jimmy on that one.
Well, yeah, I mean,
Jimmy,
I guess I'd rock it.
Do you love you some you?
Yeah, I'd rock it.
Do you
want to
want you think who where
you
should
want
he
the
go?
Browns to take T.O., Jimmy?
You know, I don't. You know what? This isn't a case of his skill at all. I think he just doesn't know how to make friends, get along with people. I think maybe he needs to buy he needs to buy donuts more for the staff than you know. Because I mean, he's really alienated so many people. He's rubs. I mean, and you don't go to work to make friends, but you don't go to work to make enemies either. So I mean, I think that's where T.O. is standing right about now, and he's hitting them in the pockets.
So spoken like the sage of Cleveland, Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist, author of the book The Denzel Principle. He was with us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Pablo Torre is a reporter for Sports Illustrated. He was with us from our NPR studios in New York. Lester Spence is a political science professor at Johns Hopkins University and author of Stare in the Darkness, The Limits of Hip-Hop and Black Politics. He was with us from member station WUOM in Ann Arbor. And Mario Loyola is director of the Center for 10th Amendment Studies at the Texas Public Policy Foundation. That's a conservative think tank, and he was with us from member station KUT in Austin. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
See you guys.
Peace.
Yep, yep.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.